We know what happened to those who chanced to meet the great god Pan. And those who are wise know that all symbols are symbols of something, not of nothing. It was, indeed, an exquisite symbol beneath which men long ago veiled their knowledge of the most awful, most secret forces which lie at the heart of all things. Forces before which the souls of men must wither and die and blacken, as their bodies blacken under the electric current. Such forces cannot be named, cannot be spoken, cannot be imagined except under a veil and a symbol. A symbol to the most of us appearing a quaint, poetic fancy. To some, a foolish tale. But you and I, at all events, have known something of the terror that may dwell in the secret place of life, manifested under human flesh. That which is without form, taking to itself a form. From the story, The Great God Pan, by Arthur Machen. Solve the World, a fictional adventure told in 100 episodes. Episode 97, The Last Temptation of Jennifer Dash. Let me present to you Miles Faw. Once upon a time he was tall, entering middle age, with jet black hair. Undeniably handsome, but the type of handsome that is often viewed as brutish and off-putting. Still, you would like him immediately if you met him. That'd likely be because he'd want you to like him. You see, liking him makes you more susceptible to his will and whims. That being said, it wouldn't per se be wrong to like him. He's trying to be a wonderful human being, utilizing all the powers granted to him as an infant to make the world somehow better. That's why he tutored under the noblest of principles, the savviest of creatures, Adam, the first man. He learned hard and he learned long how this world spins and creaks. He's been a man of many faces and professions, a psychiatrist, a sailor, a strategist, a historian, a survivalist, an experimenter, a romancer. A keeper of secrets. Now, he plays a new role. Villain. You're with him now, walking amidst an arid, windy desert. Wind gusts send floods of sand into your eyes. It is unpleasant. The fog is present here, just like everywhere else, but its veil is somehow less potent now. You can see maybe 15, 20 feet in front of you. It's hard to walk as your feet fall deep within piles of hot sand with every step. The air burns your skin. You lift your hand up to shield you from the sun, but the fog's presence makes it magnanimous, diffused, but all present. There are no shadows here. You don't want to walk. Your body is dying. You feel confident of this much. An inner ache, mired in a sort of internal revulsion, pushes up through your sternum into the deepest and most precious caves of your lungs. A sort of blackness. It's as if the closet from your childhood has invaded. It never did while you lived there, all those years ago. Only now, after Balaam, after the chains, the amputation, the reemergence of starvation and thirst. Only now has the dream renewed itself. Only now is the darkness sprawling inside of you. It's death. That's what it is. You need not lie to yourself. Not here. The shadow in the darkness, the enveloping cocoon, swept you away. It took you here. And now it, or more specifically, he, Miles Faw, holds your hand, your one and only, and leads you through the desert. Meet Miles Faw. No longer is he roguishly demure and beautiful. No longer is he tall, dark, and handsome. Now, he leads you under the burning sun in what has to be the Sahara Desert as a crooked, withered, and sick specimen. His skin hangs off his bones in some places, improperly squeezes it in others. His hand feels like rusted sandpaper. His teeth are black and rotten. His cheeks are bursting with pussing aches. His hair is knotted, turned half white, and thinning unsymmetrically. He's an awful mixture of Frankenstein's monster and Frankenstein's hunchbacked assistant Igor. A travesty to behold. Don't be fooled, he says to you, smiling back at you with his broken grin. I'll shed this skin soon. You walk and walk. Sand flies so steadily into your eyes that you can no longer close them properly, your eyelids being too congested with pebbles crowding into little balls on the underside and corners of your retinas. You think to speak, to say something to this, your once friend. Friend. That was never the right word for Miles Faw. You think to speak, but you're too weary, too broken. The last of your energy is consummated in this Herculean effort to trudge on. You can't speak. I know, you're tired. Just a few steps more. You wonder where he's taking you. I'm taking you to my laboratory. Did you just speak? Did he just answer your question? I know, you're tired. You don't need to speak. I can grab your thoughts easily enough. Scoop them up like candy. The hand, your hand, it's gone. It's gone. And it hurts. You can feel flames engulfing it. An invisible flame gnawing away, feasting on your bitter stub. If you squint, you can begin to see it now. You try to look, and at first, you simply don't see. You don't see anything beyond the unending javelin assault of dust and heat. Then, slowly, you begin to make something out. Green. Tall. Green. Trees. You feel under your poor feet the dust beginning to settle. Your shoes aren't sinking into mounds of the stuff anymore. It's thinning out. A few more steps. You're amidst it. Palm trees. Grass. Lush vines creeping up the palms. Further up. Further in. You'll see. Yes. You let go of his hand and try your best to run. It's more of a stammer, but you make it, collapsing into a perfect, calm, clear, blue reservoir. You can't breathe. You're drowning, sucking in water into your lungs, but you don't care. Your skin rejoices. You feel like your body is about to jump outside itself with joy. We long forget how frail our human shells are. We constantly talk the big talk, dictating magnum opuses concerning evolved ethics and abstract statistics. But take away the simplest of things from our bodies, and watch how quickly we retract towards animalism. You come to the precipice of speaking in your relief. You want to sigh, to shout, to rejoice. The flames ever consuming your forgotten hand have been quenched by this sudden oasis. And yet, something in you knows that to speak is a sin. You can't go back. You can't normalize yourself again. Ever again. To speak is to validate this world. You won't do it. Let the great god Pan rule sadistically. You won't validate him with your voice. Not anymore. Yeah, the Pan thing got weird, didn't it? You think, Miles knows about that? I was watching you. I had to. If he was watching you, if he could have brought you here back then why didn't he? That's an obvious question, and a good one. We'll get there. Mark Janner was always the one. While he was Lilith's right hand, you could always tell. He was waiting for his moment to bite. A shark in training for years. I'll grant him. It was smart of him to leech onto that Laura lady. From what I understand, he took her on as soon as she went on TV, telling the world that it was her nephew Lilith stole. Don't be fooled by Janner's good cop, bad cop shtick. And don't be too harsh on Laura. She tried her best. Flashes of Laura, horned and slicing your digits off. You don't forgive her. You don't have mercy. You only wonder, is she still out there? No, Janner took care of her. Once he got to Japan, to the place they were keeping you, he had Laura and her group rounded up. They're all buried in some unnamed ditch somewhere now. He was quite mad at her. He wanted you in one piece. You're waiting in the lake while Miles talks down at you from the abyss's edge. So, you like my laboratory? You do. You dare to look him in the eyes, to affirm that whatever this place is, it's better than the place you came from. You want to tell him that you're glad he magically whisked you away. But as you meet his gaze, you shudder. He's hideous. Absolutely hideous looking. Come, walk on the water's edge with me. I won't always look this way. I just wanted you to see me this way first, so that you'll believe me when I show you my real power. You can't help but be intrigued. You get up. Side by side, you walk on the still water's edge, shoes soaking in and out of the cool lake. Transportation was the first real trick I learned. It's the easiest thing to do, but it, unfortunately has harsh side effects on the body. In the beginning, I thought the traveling came with a steep cost. Now, I know how simple the solution is. You think, so the Shining Man is training him now. Not exactly, no. The Shine is not one to want communion. She is a loner, through and through. And why not? When you have such power, power to create, why would you want company? Miles pointed to a dock up ahead, following the curve of the lake. Sitting there, tied with rope to a wooden plank, is the Orion. Again. I sent the boat to you, to help you. You haven't been alone, Jen. I've been with you. This one here, it was my first try. I wanted to practice first before I was sure I was sending you a good product. I thought maybe you'd put it together, that I was the one who sent you what you prayed for. Pretty neat, huh? I can answer prayers. Miles grabs your hand firmly, with conviction. The difference between me and God, or the great god Pan for that matter, is that when I answer prayers, I answer yes. Yes. When's the last time Pan's done that for you? Further up, further in. Beyond, there's a fallen tree. Its roots are pulled out, sprawling into the air. The trunk rests semi-submerged at the lake's edge, its tall frame extending out into the mist on a horizontal horizon. It's enormous, the base of this fallen thing, maybe 8 feet tall. You and he reach it. Climb. You hesitate. Just this once. This is the last time I'll ask you to climb. And look, you can see the peak. Miles leads by example, mounting the limb, cresting over its ridge, and hopping over to the other side. You decide you better follow. One, two, three strong steps and you're there, on top of the fallen giant. Beyond, you see now, is a lush field of green grass. Miles stands amidst the field, smirking up at you. Watch, he says as he presses his left palm against the tops of the green grass. As if shivering from the touch, the grass around Fa's palm shakes, dances for a moment, and then... violet. Light violet. The color streams out in ripples, like a pebble's impact on a calm shore. You are in awe. The field before you is no longer green. No, it's purple. Beautiful. Beyond speakable. Or... how about your favorite color? Miles torts. And, this time, instead of touching the grass, he merely snaps a finger. Orange. Not bright, intimidating orange. Not hungry orange, the hue with brown and red hints. No, rather, pastel orange. Easter morning orange. The beauty continues to be unspeakable. Breathtaking. You don't move. How could you? If you're timid about coming down, may I suggest another method of travel? Miles points up. There. Just there. A mere 3 or 4 feet above you, a hot air balloon floats peacefully, breathlessly just beyond your arm's reach. It looks familiar. That's because it is familiar, Miles says. It's from the same family as the one we escaped Ireland in. You hesitate. You... don't want to be alone with Miles in the air. Even though he brought you here, even though the grass and the skies obey him, you don't trust him or his world. That's fine, just fine. Fog stands out a hand in the sky and wipes the air. As he does so, you watch incredulously as the balloon dissolves from view. Gone. Completely. You rub your eyes. Yes, still gone. Was it ever there? You wonder. Of course it was. He wipes the air in reverse. The balloon is present. You don't just see it with your eyes. You smell the hot air pulsing from it. You feel the air current fanning off the outer surface. Wax off. And again, it's gone. Poof. A sudden sense of vertigo. Your grip on reality is shaken. You stumble off the tree, falling onto your knees. Here, on your knees, amidst the sea of pastel orange grass, like nothing you've ever known. The quintessential opposite of being locked in a box. There's no lifeless groom bleeding in the darkness here. Your hands sink into the wet soil below the grass stems. It feels real. You pull the roots up, pushing it into your nostrils, looking for the man behind the curtain. There must be an end to this illusion, right? It can't go on like this. There are things I can't do yet. It's taken me a while, quite a while, to get this far. But here we are. What can't he do? You wonder. I can't make the mist go away, he says. He motions with his arm, flailing in a fluid motion at the fog. You have to expect the air itself to recoil from the god's thrust. It doesn't. The mist remains. You glare deep into Miles's eyes. Maybe you were wrong about him. Maybe he's really been onto something. If he's really found this power, who can stop him? Maybe that's what life is about. Maybe this is the secret to solve the world. You have to make sacrifices of yourself and others to acquire power. And then, in its acquisition, you can begin to undo all the pain, all the evil. You can undo the evil you've become. Yes, maybe sometimes you have to first become evil, gain access to it, to beat it. Play the game hard to beat the game. Yes. You stare into those ugly eyes, hoping to find a way to love this brute standing before you. He smiles broadly. You're forced to notice his mouth. One of his top left teeth, his canines, the vampire teeth, looks cracked and holding on by a thread. You motion to your mouth. Miles instinctually feels for his mouth and immediately feels for the broken tooth. Sure enough, it comes out. He grins again, somewhat sheepishly. You grimace. Look behind you. He points just behind you to the left. You stand and turn and fall on your bottom. You scoot away, staining your butt with pastel grass stains. You're horrified. What are they? What are they? What are they? You want to scream, but you can't do that, old girl. So you grab your face instead. Force your mouth shut with your one remaining hand. What are they? There, sitting lifelessly, two of them, fully dressed, eyes open wide, lifeless, 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 like wax models. Miles walks up to his, touches it. They're real, just waiting to be filled. No, you think. No. It's frightening, yes, but this is how life works. This is the sausage factory, if you will. I love you too much to keep you in the dark. He strokes his fingers through his one's jet black hair. Thick and full. Not at all like Miles' current condition. It wasn't splotchy, thinning, and gray. It was thick, full, beautiful. There's no reason you should be chained to your current body. You don't know what to think. You don't know what to be. You don't have to do the math. There isn't some tricky ethical triangulation that you have to calculate. This is just life. We're born in bodies, Jennifer. Cages. We are more than cages, you and I. Think of it like a hermit crab. The hermit crab lives in one shell until she outgrows it. What does she do then? She finds a new one. Finds a new shell. That's all these are. New shells. There, sitting like dummies, arms to their sides, heads bent back, resting against the strong tree limb, legs jutting out, shoes flopping to the side, were two clones. At least that's what you think they are. They must be. Perfect Jen and Miles clones. Fully clothed, full grown, immaculate conceptions. I'll go first. Show you it's no big deal. Miles pounds his chest with a closed fist, like a gorilla. He stops momentarily, turns his head to you, and says, "Don't worry. You won't have to do this. It's one of those things like tying a tie. It's harder to tie someone else's tie than to do your own. Only here it's, you know, vice versa. It'll be simple to do it to you, I promise. It's a little harder to do it to myself, is all." He finishes speaking, and his eyes begin to glaze over. He's motionless beside the chest pounding. Miles Fott opens his cruddy mouth, wide. He sticks his hand in his throat as if preparing to pull out his own tongue. He thrusts his hand out. There's a moment, a brief instant, a singularity perhaps, wherein everything is motionless. And then it's over. Miles' body falls to pieces. You think you see it. His essence. His ghostly presence. Scuttling the dimensions, floating into purgatory. It levitates towards the dummy clone. And then... the dummy awakes. Smiles. Hops up.
Ta-da!
Run. Run. Run! You run. Your heart's racing. You can't get far. You trip. Don't stop. Run! You run. The world's a blur. The orange pastels are wafting before and behind you. You fall. Get up. Run! Run. You run. You trip over nothing. Go! Someone's got you.
Shh.
It's okay. It's okay. You're in his arms. Shh. It's okay. Look. I'm whole. I'm here. It's no trick. No illusion. It's no mystery. No sacred ritual. No sacrifice. It's barely physics. Shh. It's okay. You don't have to shiver. You don't have to quake. Then what is it? You wonder and continue to shiver. It's here. Here. You're shaking horribly. Calm down. Let's go back to the lake, okay? Drink some more water. In his arms, you both manage to huddle the 25 paces or so to the water's edge. Go ahead, drink. You bend down and drink. The water's cool. Too cool. You feel it ice your internal organs as you down it. But it's good, too. You were too hot. You didn't know it. You were so hot. Your forehead's drenched in sweat. Man, you're hot. You're cold. You're everything and nothing. Being held here by a ghost... I'm not a ghost. Neither are you.
You're not a man.
I misjudged the situation. I apologize. I didn't suspect this would be such a shock to you. Miles reads your mind, but there's nothing to read. You're blank. All blanked up. I thought your given hand would have prepared you for this. It's the same magic.
Magic,
you think. Okay, magic's a scary word. It's just a turn of phrase.
Call it what you want. Where did he find this power? Who did he kill to get it?
No one. No one. I killed no one. Jen, there's an infinite abyss of possibilities. But there's only one universe. All I'm doing is sticking my hand in the pool of passed up possibility and pulling out the thing I want. That's how I brought the Orion to you. I pulled an Orion out of the pool. I brought it to you. You sank it. Fine. I can go get you another. They're just things.
I'm not a thing.
I know that. I know that. You're irreplaceable. One of a kind. That's why the shine wants identities. That's real power. That's the secret sauce. But I've chosen my path now. I've seen the road the Shining Man leads. It's the same path Adam chose. I'm not like them. At the end of the day, those two, they're both idealists. They refuse to compromise. And because of that, the world suffers. I suffered. I suffered under Piper, and I suffered in my hunt for the Shining Man.
So he found him, and isn't following him. But he's not following Piper. They're at war.
How do you choose a third side in a world war? Look, the end is coming. I don't know why. Maybe Piper found a new plan. Or maybe it's just the predetermined time for Leviathan to finally wake up.
We saw Leviathan in the Arctic.
Yeah, you remember that day, Jen? I wanted to go through the door. I wanted to take you with me.
You let hundreds of children get butchered to get to that door.
That's because I thought there was some magic formula in the door. I figured the ancient ones, Mrs. Moose, Merlin, and the others were smarter than they were. I trusted their age. But now, I know they're all just cowards. Afraid. So afraid.
Leviathan. Afraid of Leviathan.
You wonder in your heart. No. Afraid of the one who made Leviathan. Afraid of the one who made Adam.
God.
A god. The god of this universe. Surely there are more.
How does he know that?
You won't believe me, but I'll try telling you anyway. Again, because I love you, I'm not gonna keep you out of this. Let's see. Imagine that this universe is lying on top of a thin, taut string. The whole universe, Jen. Every time something happens, anything, a breath of air, an amoeba squirming, a monkey swinging by its tail, a thought, anything and everything creates a vibration. All these vibrations add up to one symphony. All the vibrations coalesce into this one final sound. All you have to do is think on a certain frequency, and other worlds, other vibration symphonies, are at your fingertips. Each object in these worlds have their own little distinct vibration. So you listen, and you pick up with that vibration with your thoughts and return home.
But you said those other objects come from untapped possibilities.
Yes, so to capture a Gen Dash, I listen to your frequency, and then I search for it in the other worlds. But none of those worlds has the real Gen Dash identity, the real Gen Dash spirit.
They're fake.
No, not fake. They're just soulless. That's not a good word, but unrealized. Maybe that's better. Unrealized. You don't understand. It's something that can... It's something that can't really be understood. I watched the Shining One capture identities over and over again. I hid, and I watched. And I saw her impress and persuade by conjuring up these objects through song.
Song?
All the world's a song, Jen. Miles pulls your hand to his chest. Listen. Feel your song. You listen. You close your eyes. You're not sure if you hear anything, but you know, there's something different about this moment. It's a holy moment. When you open your eyes, there you are, laying on the shore, lifeless and pure. Another Gen Dash, plucked out of vibration land, laying right beside you. Just say the word, and you'll be in this new body. You'll have your hand back. Your belly will be full, and your body will be Balaam free. You'll be the real Gen Dash again.
What then?
Then, we'll fly away, Jennifer.
Fly away?
Sure. We'll surf the limitless worlds, bouncing to and fro without a care. No more suffering.
But I want to help people.
We can. We can choose whoever. Take them with us.
Why are you doing this?
I love you, Jen. I don't want to go on without you any longer.
So what do I have to do?
Just open your mouth and say yes. boys and girls. Do you want to be on Solve the World? Do you want your voice featured here in an episode? Well, here's your opportunity. I'm looking at the end of the show now and thinking about next steps and what I want to do next. And I decided the very first thing I want to do is go back and have listener submitted next time on Solve the World endings. So for the first, 17 episodes, I spoke in this voice next time on Solve the World. And I've kind of decided that's dumb, and I would much prefer to have listeners read off the next time. So if that sounds interesting at all to have your voice on, all you got to do is send me an email. My email address is DanteStack@gmail.com. That's DanteStack@gmail.com. Send me an email with the subject line, next time on Solve the World. Do that, and if you're one of the first 49 people to do that, I will send you the script for reading one of these endings. And then you'll have 1 week to send me an MP3 of you reading next time on Solve the World. You can do it however you want, and then I'll insert your recording into the appropriate episode. You don't have to worry about this being super polished. You know, you don't need a $1,000 microphone or anything fancy like that. Heck, I don't have a $1,000 microphone. I have like a $70 microphone. So you can record this on your phone, whatever. It's just something fun, and I would really appreciate it if y'all would do it. So again, subject line of the email, next time on Solve the World. Send that to DanteStack@gmail.com. All right, guys, we're down to just 3 more episodes. Hang tight and hang with me. We're almost through it now. All the sound effects and music used in this episode and every other episode of Solve the World is appropriately attributed at DanteStack.com on our show notes page. See ya.